You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and we are back with another episode on this Wednesday. And as per Wednesday tradition, we are moving right along with our 2019 positional reviews for the 2019 season. And we've done the quarterbacks, we've talked about Lamar Jackson, done the running backs, Mark Ingram, the wide receivers were Hollywood Brown, and the tight ends with the trio of Mark Andrews, Nick Boyle, and Hayden Hurst. But now we move on, and we move on to the offensive linemen. And with the offensive linemen, this group, extremely underrated, but extremely solid for the Baltimore Ravens. A lot of youngsters on the line, and the one solid veteran in there on Marshall Yanda. So getting into all of those guys, extremely important when talking about how the Ravens performed as a whole. I mean, this top rushing offense, without an offensive line, you're not doing a lot of the stuff you do on offense with rushing, with pass protection. I mean, there's so many things the offensive line does. So in the second segment, we're going to be talking about the exterior offensive linemen, those tackles. And then the third and final segment, getting into the interior, talking about left guard, center, and of course the ever-reliable Marshall Yanda at that right guard position. So with all that being said, we're going to jump right in. But in the first segment, I want to talk about something that Spencer and I talked a bit about yesterday, and that's just how thankful we should be for the organization that the Ravens are, for how they have handled themselves, for how they have presented a winning culture. And it doesn't just date back to last season. Last season was really fun, but this has been years and years and years in the making. So talking about how the Ravens compare to other franchises, talking about the decision makers, the coaches, the GMs, the executives, the staff, and how that rubs off on the players and just the culture that the players have built from within. Just how thankful we should be for all that. And just taking a moment to glimpse into that and understand it a bit better. So that's what we're going to talk about in the first segment coming up. But before we do that, be sure to tell your friends where to follow us. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Tell them if they need some Ravens content, come listen to us on Monday through Friday at 6 a.m. Eastern Time. Also, we have Twitters at Locked On Ravens and my personal account at KOstreicher34. So all of that being said, we're going to jump right in and just talk about how amazing this Ravens franchise is. And we are fans, right? We are fans that want to see a successful franchise, but we also want to see the players having fun. We want to see the culture being built is a winning one. We don't want to have a franchise where nobody gets along with anybody. We don't want to have a franchise where, you know, they maybe win a game and they're like, okay, yay, now we'll go home, do our separate things, come back to work. The Ravens players, and we'll start there. These Ravens players love each other, and it's gone back for a really long time. The bonds that these players have, and they're unbreakable. And it's something where, with Baltimore and their players, you have to look at how they want to bring guys into the locker room who fit that winning culture that they have built up over the years. You know, gone are the guys like Ray Rice who made a mistake, and he's gone. Mistakes are not tolerated. The Ravens don't bring in a lot of guys with high character issues. Now, maybe there'll be some guys who they bring in who are maybe temperamental, maybe like a Steve Smith, you know, but he didn't have any issues. Guys who might have their own opinions, you know, Bernard Pollard, a strong opinionated guy, but they're not going to bring in guys anymore who have the domestic violence. They're not going to bring in guys who have criminal records. And I mean, maybe that changes. I don't know if it ever will. Maybe they'll bring in a guy who deserves, you know, who they think deserves a second chance. But as of right now, the Ravens really don't mess around with that stuff. If there's a red flag in the draft process with somebody who maybe had a few run-ins with the law, they're not really looking seriously at those guys. Maybe it's all smoke and mirrors. And the reason for that is Baltimore just wants to be able to build a culture that is positive, that is able to get young guys acclimated to the NFL game without having, you know, these big diva personalities that, you know, it's me, and you don't get the rookies as involved as they should be, or they don't feel like they can speak up. Everybody on that Ravens roster, you go 1 through 53, all the way down to the practice squad, I think every one of those guys knows that they are an important part to this team. You know, they're not going to run into any Steelers situations with the Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell drama, because they don't put themselves in that situation, and the coaching staff, the executives, the staff, they do not let it happen. And just guys like Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, Terrell Suggs, those are leaders. Those are leaders that teams need to be able to grow alongside, for young guys to be able to come up with, and for veterans to come in and say, these are guys that I want to play with. I talked about it yesterday with Spencer for a bit. and also with Matthew on Friday, where you look at the Ravens culture and just how much it really does contribute to who comes in to play for them. You look at Calais Campbell, and he said, yeah, I took less money to come to Baltimore, not because I just wanted to win a championship, which, you know, that was a big part of it, of course. But he saw at the Pro Bowl how special things were. He saw at the Pro Bowl just the bond that these guys have. And especially for older veterans who might be looking for a ring, who might be looking to enjoy their last few years of football, as Spencer said yesterday, he came from a not-so-great situation in Jacksonville where everybody was getting traded. You know, the GM and the owner don't see eye to eye with the players. The coach is a little out there. Sometimes they just want to enjoy the game of football. The way that the Ravens brought in Mark Ingram is a great culture fit and a guy who really helped them both on and off the field, not performance on the football field wise, but just bringing that swagger, bringing that energy, bringing that fun to a young team. Marshall Yanda, who's a very ho-hum, I'm going to put my head down, I'm going to do my work, and I'm going to dominate. He said that that was the most fun that he's ever had in a football season. And that's saying a lot coming from Marshall Yanda, because he's a guy who is an all-time great, one of the best right guards to ever play the game of football. But he wasn't a guy who was super out there. He wasn't a guy who was, you know, jumping up and down, celebrating. But he was out there, you know, it seemed like he was just like a child out there having fun. And that's what the Ravens want to see, because I believe in this philosophy and I believe the Ravens believe in it also, where you can't win football games if you're not having fun. Now, obviously, that saying, it goes a certain length, and then to a degree, yes, you can win football games, but it makes it so much sweeter, it makes it so much better, and if you don't have chemistry with your guys, I mean, we see the Cleveland Browns right now, who have arguably a very, very talented roster, one of the most talented rosters in the entire NFL, but still go 6-10 last year. You know, with Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, David Njoku, Nick Chubb, all these guys on their team, not to mention the defense led by Myles Garrett, the departed Joe Schobert, they have Denzel Ward on that team. I mean, there are so many guys on that roster, but it just seemed like Freddie Kitchens couldn't connect with the players. There are a lot of personalities on that team. Baker Mayfield is a personality. Jarvis Landry is a personality. Odell Beckham is a personality. All these guys are personalities, and sometimes, you know, those personalities can clash, and you have to have a coach who can deal with that. Freddie Kitchens for them was not the guy. We'll see if Kevin Stefanski can do that for them, and if they can, if he can kind of get that grasp on the locker room, I think the Browns could be very, very good next season. But the Ravens have been very lucky to have great coaches throughout their tenure, dating all the way back to their founding date. I mean, you can look at Brian Billick, you can look at John Harbaugh. You know, those are the two guys that really stick out in my mind. Ted Marchibroda didn't have as long as a Ravens tenure as the other two, but with Brian Billick, you can say what you want about him. I think he was still a pretty good coach. With John Harbaugh, he came in and installed that iron fist rule where it's, you know, we're not going to put up with anything here, but we also want to hear your opinions as players. And now John Harbaugh, he wasn't always his player's coach. We can date it back, you know, a few years, and John Harbaugh's coaching approach has changed. It was more of an iron fist rule, more of a, all right, we're really not going to put up with this, and there's, you know, not a lot you can do about it. But as the years have gone on, John Harbaugh has realized that, you know, the players are important. And I don't think that ever not went through his head, but I just think that as he's gotten older, as he's gotten wiser, he's been able to identify with the players more. He's been able to sit back and enjoy, you know, what the players bring to the table, not only on the field, but in meetings, you know, even sometimes even with personnel decisions. You never know with those kind of things. But John Harbaugh and the way that this team just bonds and gels, everybody loves John Harbaugh now. I mean, there were the rumors of him being fired and, you know, about him not being able to get it done in the playoffs the last few years. Well, this team, I don't think, can win the Super Bowl without John Harbaugh, and that might be kind of a controversial thing to say, but the bond that he has with Lamar Jackson, the bond that he has with these players now, it's unbreakable. And if you take that away from him and take that away from the players, I don't know if it will go over very well just bringing in a new guy to, you know, lead this team. I think John Harbaugh is the right guy to lead this team and lead the players who Baltimore brings in, like Calais Campbell, like Derek Wolfe. I mean, these Michael Brockers and Ryan Grant situations, you know, they're rare. And you can say what you want about Baltimore and their physicals. You can even go look at the Orioles and say, just what is up with Baltimore in their physicals? I mean, it might be some of the most rigorous physical testing in the entire sports world. But it doesn't matter, because Baltimore wants to get their guys, they run their organization their way, and if they get cold feet, they get cold feet. There's a guy they're not comfortable with for injury reasons. You can't say anything negative about a team for wanting to, you know, run their organization the right way and identifying a mistake or identifying a bad signing in their eyes before it even happens. So Baltimore runs their organization the exact way I think their organization should be run, you know, getting the right players in, getting the right coaches in, and making sure that everybody gels, getting that team chemistry, getting the culture. And that's why, even though they've been in the league for, you know, compared to other teams, it's like they're a child almost, you know, other teams have been in the league so much longer and don't have that reputation. Baltimore has done such a good job of establishing a very good reputation throughout the entire league of a place where veterans, you know, want to go to play. Eric Weddle, Steve Smith, Derek Mason, Steve McNair. I mean, so many guys. The list just goes on. And I mean, add Calais Campbell in 2020. The Ravens benefit from their culture, not only on the field, but also off of it as well. And I am very thankful to have guys like Eric DaCosta and Ozzie Newsome who have run the franchise and made sure that nothing goes awry, that nothing gets, you know, blown out of proportion, that everything is solved and everything is good in Baltimore. So the Ravens, one of the best cultural fits in the entire NFL, the best culture in the entire NFL, in my opinion. And as the years go on, I don't think anything about that is changing. We're going to head to our first break here. When we return, we're going to be getting into the exterior offensive line, talking about the left tackle and right tackle positions. Stay tuned, and we will be back soon. Welcome back to the second segment of this Locked on Ravens episode here on a Wednesday. Kevin Oshaker still hanging out with you here. And we just talked about how thankful we should be for how the Ravens are run as an organization and their culture that they have put into place and kept over years and years of football. But here we are in the second segment, getting into the nitty-gritty, talking about the 2019 season review for offensive linemen. We're going to start here with the exterior, and the exterior offensive line, so solid for Baltimore. And we have to start with Ronnie Stanley, the 2016 first round pick. And this was a jump. This season was a jump for Ronnie Stanley. You know, since coming into the league as the first tackle selected, obviously the Laremy Tunsil gas mask incident, it was pretty well known that Baltimore was pretty high on Laremy Tunsil, and he was actually in consideration for the number one pick. And he was considered being taken by a bunch of teams in the early portion of that draft, top five even. But then the video of Laremy Tunsil smoking marijuana out of a gas mask tanked him all the way down to the middle of the first round. Ronnie Stanley was the tackle that was selected by Baltimore, and he had been a pretty solid left tackle. No complaints, a guy who was probably in the better half of the NFL's offensive tackles, probably a top 15 offensive tackle when you look at left and right side. But the ascension, the absolute ascension of Ronnie Stanley in 2019, he was a first-team All-Pro, he was a Pro Bowler, and now he is one of the top offensive linemen in the entire league. And looking a little bit into Pro Football Focus and their grading system, he earned an 87.2 mark for pass protection. That is unbelievable. And to kind of go into more unbelievable stats with pass protection, Ronnie Stanley took 938 snaps in 2019. That's a lot of snaps. He allowed zero sacks on the year. 938 snaps, zero sacks. Can you believe that? That is absurd. That is top tackle play in what is going to ultimately get Ronnie Stanley top tackle money. Now, he faced solid pass rusher after solid pass rusher after solid pass rusher. He did so many good things for this Baltimore offense, and it also goes beyond the pass protecting, too. He was a very good run blocker. Now, if you had to pick, does Ronnie Stanley excel in pass protection or run protection? It's definitely pass protection, but Ronnie Stanley still was a mauler. He's very physical, very smart, knows how to play the game of football. I mean, there's so many things you can look at with Ronnie Stanley. He committed five penalties on the year, six total pressures in the games that he played in. He did miss a game with a concussion against the New York Jets, and also didn't play in that game against Pittsburgh. But what are you going to do there, right? I mean, those are games that, you know, if Ronnie Stanley misses one game a season, two games a season, you'll take that even though you wish upon a guy to play the full 16 games. Ronnie Stanley missed a game that was pretty winnable against the Jets and then obviously a pretty meaningless game in Pittsburgh. Now, with all these offensive linemen, there's going to be some, oh, well, he was aided by the fact that Lamar Jackson had this running game and Lamar Jackson, you know, he's so elusive and he's so able to escape the pocket and do so many things by himself. Well, if Lamar Jackson was put out there without an offensive line, he'd be stopped behind the line probably 9 times out of 10. And I'm confident Lamar Jackson could potentially, you know, get past one of the defensive schemes there by himself on a play, but he's not doing much without an offensive line. If you put 10 receivers out there with Lamar Jackson and he's the 11th guy on the field, no, nothing's going to work out there. You're going to spread the defense out, but, you know, free rushers are not a good thing. The Ravens offensive line especially Ronnie Stanley did so, so well in 2019, established himself as one of the best pass-protecting left tackles, one of the best pass-protecting offensive linemen in the entire league. So an amazing season for Ronnie Stanley, and then his bookend on the other side, Orlando Brown Jr. And Orlando Brown Jr., obviously in the footsteps of his father, wanted to be even better in his second season. His rookie season saw him step in for James Hurst, him and Lamar Jackson taking over, you know, around the same time. Both were starting the season as backups and then took over their respective positions. And he came on strong towards his rookie season, towards the end of that rookie season. And when you look at the playoff game against the Chargers, we'll consider that an outlier. His game, you know, to put it not so lightly, was pretty atrocious, but everybody has a game like that. It just happened for him in the playoffs, but he bounced back, and this year absolutely was so good for the Ravens, and a guy who was Ronnie Stanley's bookend performed very well. And part of that, you can say, is, you know, he thrived alongside Marshall Yanda, and anybody will probably thrive alongside Marshall Yanda. We'll talk about how Matt Skura thrived, how Patrick McCarthy thrived, Bradley Bozeman even, playing alongside a veteran who's so smart, so savvy, knows exactly what to do at all times. That helps. But Brown would be a starter on a lot of NFL teams. He is massive. He is very good. And he allowed 3 sacks, committed 3 penalties. And he actually went to the Pro Bowl. He was an alternate in the Pro Bowl. A player dropped out, and Orlando Brown got to go to the Pro Bowl. So extremely valuable experience for Orlando Brown to be on a team like that, to get a full season of starting on an NFL team and playing in big, high-pressure games in the playoffs. I mean, the first full season, it's over now for Orlando Brown. It's now over for Lamar Jackson. He is a stud. The Ravens, I think that they're expecting a huge breakout from him in year 3 yet again. You know, can they keep that breakout train going? I think for the Ravens, they actually could get another breakout season from Orlando Brown Jr. because, you know, he wasn't amazing, but he was great. You know, I wouldn't call his season perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I would call him having a great season. But he could definitely have an amazing season in year 3. But getting into 2019, I mentioned the 3 sacks, the 3 penalties. He is a mauler. He is a big guy. You know, he's going to overwhelm a lot of defensive ends, a lot of edge rushers. So you have to like what the Ravens have as their starting offensive tackles in Orlando Brown Jr. and Ronnie Stanley. Both going to command some big money, but for the Ravens in 2019, they had him for cheap, and it paid off for Baltimore. And then moving on to the primary backup in James Hurst, a guy who plays a lot of guard positions, a lot of tackle positions. You know, he plays pretty much all over the offensive line, any position not named center. And for James Hurst, didn't really do a ton for Baltimore. He started in 2 games for Baltimore, both at M&T Bank Stadium, one against the Jets, of course, when Ronnie Stanley went down with that concussion, and then another one against the Pittsburgh Steelers in a game where Ronnie Stanley didn't play in that offensive line, you know, got a rest for the playoff run that was going to be upcoming for them, and performed solidly. I'm not going to say he played badly. I'm not going to say he played amazing, but, you know, a pretty, you know, nonchalant season for James Hurst. He was active for all 16 games, but, you know, didn't really contribute a ton, and that led to him eventually being cut. You know, the suspension for PEDs did not help in the slightest, but James Hurst, a guy who was very versatile, very valuable to Baltimore, and they're going to need to replace that depth along the offensive line because currently they don't have a guy who can do that for them anymore, you know? They have to get into the draft, get some tackle depth, maybe sign a veteran, but overall for Baltimore, the exterior offensive line performed phenomenally, and a lot of things to come in 2020, and I think they can build off of that great 2019 campaign. We're going to head to our final break now. When we return, we're going to be getting into the interior offensive line, talking about Marshall Yanda, Bradley Bozeman, Matt Skura, and more, so stay tuned, and we will be right back. Welcome back to the final segment of this Locked On Ravens episode. Kevin Ostreicher still with you here. As we just talked about the exterior offensive lineman, we are now getting into the interior guys. And let's start off with Marshall Yanda, the big steady presence at that right guard spot for 13 seasons. He was 35 years old this past season in 2019. And he was absolutely the best player on that Ravens offensive line, the key cog that made everything turn. I mentioned it a little bit last segment, the football IQ that this guy has, the ability for him to be in a position at all times to win, a position to win the battles in the trenches, it's unbelievable. He earned an 85.9 grade from Pro Football Focus, and he also allowed just 1 sack on the entire season. And the way Marshall Yanda plays his play style, he's a mauler. I talked about Orlando Brown being that mauler, and And I mean, Marshall Yanda, it's kind of hard to put into words what he means to this Ravens team based off of his play style and the ability for him to understand how to make his teammates better. There was no doubt in my mind that the Ravens offensive line benefited from having him on the roster, especially because the Ravens offensive line as a whole is just so young. Out of the five starters, four of them were on rookie contracts or, you know, first year contracts. That's big, because if you have an offensive line that young, sometimes they're going to make mistakes and nobody's going to be there to tell them what they did wrong. Marshall Yanda, he was a guy who did exactly that, made sure to hold guys accountable, teach them. And I think the whole offensive line is for the better because of it. Those lessons that they learned are because Marshall Yanda was there to teach them. He also, I mentioned it, had a lot of fun this season. Him and Lamar Jackson got along really well. I mean, the hell yeah, coach, let's go for it. Marshall Yanda in the back, you know, saying, yeah, let's go for it, giggling like a little kid. I mean, those are the moments that you live for. Those are the game-defining plays that you live for. Marshall Yanda, you know, absolutely loved it out there. And for him being out there, giving it his all for this Baltimore Ravens team, you have to respect what he's done for this organization, because it wasn't even a guarantee that he was going to come back to play in 2019. He's been mulling retirement for a few years now, had that injury against the Cleveland Browns a few years ago that put him out for the entire season. Marshall Yanda's had, you know, a really, really good run. He had such a good run, and he deserved to be able to go out on his own terms. And he played at such a high level. You know, something that he was really adamant about in his retirement press conference is that he wanted to go out on his own terms to say, hey, I played at a really high level this past season. I don't want to go out having been like the 35th best guard out of 80 qualifiers. He wanted to go out being, you know, having that 85.9 grade in only allowing one sack, that high level. Now the Ravens, they have to replace that. But overall for Marshall Yanda, such a good season, such a good career. And part of the reason the Ravens were so successful in 2019, you know, you can attribute it to Marshall Yanda. But moving on to Bradley Bozeman, the left guard for Baltimore, you know, we look back in the preseason, we talk about that competition that the Ravens had at left guard. It was Jermaine Illuminor's job. You know, he had it. He had the grip on it. John Harbaugh and the Ravens coaching staff did everything in their power to just say, Jermaine Illuminor, this is your job. Here it is. Please take it. Jermaine Illuminor did absolutely nothing with the job, got traded. Bradley Bozeman was the one to take that job. And left guard was a pretty big concern for Baltimore heading into the season. But for Bradley Bozeman, you have to like what he gave them. And it was a little bit of a surprise that Bozeman won that job. Now, he did have some play in the playoffs at left guard. Came into the league as a center from Alabama in the sixth round, but kicked it to left guard. And he honestly had a pretty decent season. I'm not going to call it great or amazing by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, for what Bradley Bozeman did for Baltimore in 2019, from what people were expecting Bradley Bozeman to do in 2019, he did pretty well. Now, I mean, for him, you know, he has a little bit of physical limitations that some of the other guys on the offensive line don't have. I mean, you look at, there were plays where he would just get overworked, out-mauled, you know, just finessed by people. But for Bradley Bozeman, it was, again, a learning experience for him. And for Greg Roman, he had to be able to utilize him in different ways, being able to say, all right, we're going to pull him, we're going to kick him out, we're going to put him inside, to be able to put him in space. And when he got to the second level, he did a pretty phenomenal job at making sure to eat up defensive players. And when you're looking at the left guard position for 2020, you don't necessarily have to go into the season with two holes on the offensive line, because Bradley Bozeman did enough to show you that he deserves to at least win the spot in 2020, barring, you know, a terrible preseason or whatever in 2020. But, you know, the Ravens can go into the season having pretty good confidence in Bozeman, what he'll be able to do with another improved offseason, another year under the belt. And again, his first full season of starting, Bradley Bozeman performed, you know, pretty good. I'm not going to say it was great, but I think he played pretty well. So as Baltimore heads into 2020, being able to identify that Bradley Bozeman has the chops to be able to at least potentially be their solution there at left guard was good. And for Bozeman, a year that he could build on in 2019. But now looking at the centers, Matt Skura was a guy who I have to admit I wasn't very high on going into the season, but boy did he prove me wrong, and boy was I happy that he did. I was rooting for Matt Skura. There wasn't anything in me that had any ill will towards him. He just didn't impress me. It seemed that he had a bunch of physical limitations to him that wasn't letting him get to the second level, wasn't letting him being able to finish on his blocks. But he
put all those to bed. Looked a lot better in the preseason, looked a lot better coming into training camp even. And he was playing at a high level before, of course, going down in week 11 with those tears in his knee ligaments, his ACL, MCL, PCL. He dislocated his kneecap too. Just a horrific injury for Matt Skura. And personally, I think Matt Skura is going to come back even stronger in 2020. Showed a lot of ability that I did not know he had coming into the 2019 season, because frankly, he didn't show it to me. But as the season went on and as he kept improving, it seemed like he was improving weekly for Baltimore, something that was really a nice sign. It seemed like he had good chemistry with Lamar Jackson. It seemed like last year, him and Lamar Jackson, you know, the center to quarterback fumbles were an issue. It didn't seem like they were really on the same page. But in 2019, the Duke product just made sure that, you know, him and Lamar Jackson were on the same page and that he was executing on his blocks when he needed to. He was able to pull well. He was able to get to the second level, as I mentioned. He did a lot of things for Baltimore that personally I did not expect. So I was very surprised and very happily surprised at that with Matt Skura and his performance. But of course, he went down. His replacement was Patrick McCary. And for McCary, it was amazing to see how he was able to hold his own. Now, we have to remember that he came in the middle of this game against the Los Angeles Rams for his first ever start, his first ever game at center. I mean, and that fearsome front, Aaron Donald, the now infamous Michael Brockers, they have a lot of guys in that defensive front. He held his own. And it was unbelievable to see, and it was great to see the improvement that McCary showed throughout the season. Now, for Bozeman in 2018, his worst game was against the Chargers in the playoffs. For 2019, and McCary, his worst game was also in the playoffs against the Tennessee Titans. But what the Ravens have here in McCary is a guy who can play multiple positions along that offensive line, and as a guy who could maybe be their James Hurst, potentially. If Matt Skura does come back when that center job plays at a high level, you can put Patrick McCary at left guard if Bozeman doesn't perform. You can put Patrick McCary at right guard if Ben Powers or the guy that they draft or a veteran comes in and doesn't perform, because we saw in live football NFL action that Patrick McCary can do a lot of the things that his counterparts can. It's just a matter of him not having the exact physicals that his other teammates like Orlando Brown and Ronnie Stanley, Marshall Yanda have. He's a little bit on the smaller side. But when you look at how he was able to perform, especially being an undrafted rookie, never playing a snap at center before, it was great that the Ravens were able to have these guys, these undrafted guys in Matt Skura and Patrick McCary, who came in, proved that they are worth something at this NFL level. And building on 2020, I think it's going to be a good one for both McCary and Matt Skura. But now looking at Ben Powers, for him, 2019 was a redshirt year. I think the experience learning under Marshall Yanda will be extremely valuable for him. And him and Marshall Yanda actually have very similar play styles, very mauling, you know, physical beat-up play styles. And Ben Powers had one of the quotes of the NFL draft saying that, yeah, he just likes to see the soul leave those players' eyes in the fourth quarter as he dominates. You know, Marshall Yanda, the exact same way. He didn't put it like that, obviously, but Powers has the determination, has the will, and I think that he'll end up winning a guard position. If Bradley Bozeman struggles, you could put him at left guard, but I think the right guard position will be his. But overall, a very solid season from the Ravens in their interior offensive lineman. Obviously, Marshall Yanda, you're one of the best in the business. But for McCary, for Bozeman, for Skura, guys who weren't expected to do a lot for Baltimore, didn't have high expectations, but went in and did their part on this Ravens historic offense in 2019. That's all I have for you today. When we get back tomorrow, we're going to be getting into more free agency talk, so stay tuned, and I will see you tomorrow.